All right, welcome to another edition of the Friar Phil podcast, Friar Phil show, whatever you want to call it. Here we are, and here we are a day after we just clinched another playoff, moving ahead into the NLDS, and I'm a shiny, happy person. In fact, all the people that were out there at the stadium last night, from what I saw, they were shiny, happy people indeed, including the players. I don't know if you saw it on my Twitter, but I have some clips of Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado taking a selfie around with the crowd. These guys are just fantastic, and it was a fantastic series. And I tell you what, you know, we're going to play the Dodgers, and, you know, that's like, oh, my God, it's the dreaded Dodgers. Well, I think we're going to do good. I don't think that we're going to do bad. You know, you're probably listening to this before we played the series that's coming up on Tuesday. But I don't know. In my gut, I've got a gut feeling that we're going to do okay. And I tell you what, if we don't, we still have a lot to be proud of. Last night, with that victory, it was like winning the World Series. You know, it's been years and years waiting for something to crack, something to click with this team. I've been here since October 1999, so I missed the season of 99, but my first season with the Padres was 2000, and that's 20 years now. 20 years I've been waiting for something like this, and it was just fantastic last night. Okay, we've got a guest today. We've got the Dancing Friar. His name's Corey, and welcome to the program, Corey.
Well, this is a happy and momentous day here, Friar Phil. I don't even know if I slept at all last night. My heart was palpitating, watching even the last out. But what a fireball season.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You are right that the dreaded Dodgers that are on the horizon here are going to be a formidable foe for us. But, you know, looking back at earlier games, which we played them in, I thought we were pretty evenly matched. What do you think?
I think so, too. And if you look at the series they had with, here comes the ambulance for me, apparently. I needed one last night. Waiting to have a stroke if we didn't win it. But yeah, if you look at the series the Dodgers had with the Brewers, there was not a lot of scoring going on in those games.
Nope. If you like pitching, you'll love watching the Dodgers play the Brewers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking our pitching won't let them, well, unless Paddock pitches again, which he probably will.
What do you think about what do you think about the sheriff? Do you think he can come back from a dismal, abysmal second half of the season?
I think he needs to stop worrying about being stressed out. He needs to stop looking at his goddamn magic mirror and asking, mirror on the wall, am I the best pitcher of all?
Is that when he looks into that big black glove, you know?
I guess so.
Face buried in there. He's looking there talking to himself like Jake Peavy, I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Just go out there and pitch like you did last year. That's all we want you to do. Don't worry about the fans and what they think. You know, just go pitch the goddamn ball like last year.
There's no fans in the stands. Like, who are you listening to? You're only listening to yourself. And I think you're right. It's confidence.
Well, he's been listening to social media, and according to some people, by rumor, he's listening to his brother Michael too, feeding him shit in his head. So,
Well, he seems like an upright up guy. I don't see why that he can't shake this off and come back. It's not like he's Khalil Green or anything.
No.
Punch a wall, see what happens.
You got to be a longtime Padres fan to know who Khalil Green was. That's for sure. But yeah. Who knows? He's like when he pitched the other day. I tweeted that he's like a person with a dual personality disorder. Sometimes he's the sheriff and he pitches fantastic, and sometimes he's the mall security.
You know what the kids on the social media call him? We don't know who's going to show up. Will it be Paddock or the sheriff, or will it be Baddock?
Yeah, Baddock. Baddock, the mall security guard. I'm sorry, but you can't smoke in the mall. Thank you very much.
Look at that extended roster. You know, I was looking at that the other day. You know, they bumped up to the 28, and then now we get to go to 40. So looking at the guys that we've lost and who's going to be coming back, it's pitching. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, guys like Baez were there, and you'll see Clevenger come back, and hopefully that strain won't be just more of soreness, and he'll be able to rip out of it. But Denelson Lamet, I mean, he's the guy that I am counting on because he is just freaking lights out.
Oh, he is. Absolutely.
Perdomo will come back, and I think, who's the other guy? Taylor Williams is also going to be coming back. But, you know, they've got some interesting stuff on the horizon. For example, the left-handed pitchers that they're going to expand up. Mackenzie Gore. Who would not like to see Mackenzie Gore for his very first game being a playoff game?
Oh, for
the Gas Lamp Gang.
Uh-huh. That'd be fantastic. Right, you know who's good? Morahone. I'm really impressed with that kid.
Thank you.
Really, really did good last night. Okay, we'll talk about the Padres in a little bit more time. But first, I want to have you explain the Dancing Friar. I introduced you as the Dancing Friar, and people are probably wondering if they don't know you or if they don't hang out in right field at the stadium, who the Dancing Friar is, why you danced, how you got started doing it, and a little bit about yourself.
I grew up here in town in San Diego, and then went off to school up at UCLA and moved up to San Francisco, and then came back in about 2005. And when I got back, So I went to the Padre game, maybe in September, and I looked at this beautiful new stadium. And remember, when I had left, the Padres were brown, and when I came back, the Padres were blue, right? So I looked around and I thought, God, this is really kind of vanilla here. I'm used to going to games at the Murph. I'm used to going to places where it was spicy, you know, and was like, you know, that San Diego's got that, you know, sort of Mexican flavor was so close. This is what I call Northern Tijuana.
Yeah.
And it was really vanilla when I went there to Petco. And I thought, and I remember going to one of the games, and I slipped on one of the a robe that we used to do when I was a kid. We used to go to the Padre games at Dodger Stadium and at up at Candlestick Park back when I was living in those cities, and I would go dressed as a monk and with some friends of mine, and we'd have a good time. But he wasn't a character I had developed at this point. But when I came back and noticed it was really vanilla, I thought, you know what, the one thing that this town needs is to cast off that vanilla sort of flavor and really bring the spice back. And so I started going to a few games, and it was hysterical. People wanted to come over and talk to me and chat with me. But I was really more interested in putting a character together that nobody would talk to. So I started really up at the very top, you know, where the flagpoles are up there on the right field side.
Right.
I stood up there on a little ledge, and I would just dance around. And every once in a while, they'd show me up on the big screen, but I didn't really want to yap with people. I just remembered as a kid, Phil, there was a guy that the Braves had, both in Milwaukee and then in Atlanta, and he was Chief Nakahoma. Do you remember Chief Nakahoma?
Chief Nakahoma. That brings back memories.
He was a fan. He was an Indian guy, Levi. I'll think of his name in a second. But he basically was a Native American guy, and he actually would dress up at the games. And then eventually they built him a teepee. And then every time that they would hit a home run, he would come out and do this dance. And then he'd go back in the teepee, watch some more of the game, and then when they did something good, he'd get out and he'd do this thing. I thought, fuck, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. There was a guy in Baltimore. Do you remember this guy? His name was Bill Heggie. They called him Wild Bill Heggie. He was just a fan up in Section 34, and he was known as the Roar from Section 34. And he had this big cowboy hat, and he'd get up and he'd lead cheers for everybody. I thought, that's what this town needs. It needs some iconic like the old days when the chicken was around, right?
Right.
The swinging friar, you know, he's part of the shtick of the organization, but it doesn't come as a natural, organic display that, let's say, that something like Chief Nakahoma would be, or the chicken, or those sort of things. So I wanted to really represent the emotion that fans feel, even if it's just sorrow or anger, just in a big sort of mimey, shticky way, where people from across the stadium could see me, you know, elated or angry or any of those sort of things. Well, fast forward about a year later, 2006, I was up there doing it again. And 2007, I came down to the area where I now inhabit, which, as you probably know, is called the Right Field Mission, RFM. The Right Field Mission, there was a series of people down there. You've ever seen Luigi, who's the little fella who's out there, who's a big, longtime fan. His mom works at the park. You know, he's just part of the organization.
Yeah. You always have to watch where you're walking and stuff. You don't want to step on him.
You may step on Luigi. We, by the way, we referred to him as Ouija.
Ouija.
A few years ago, he wanted to have a nickname like Wee Man, he said. So I said, okay, we're going to start calling you Ouija. He thought that was really funny.
I guess it's better than calling him Tiny.
Well, you know, he's a big boy now. He's been eating a lot of Lolitas. So
yeah.
There's that. But then Ishmael, Ishmael who hangs the K's. We call him K-Dude. And then there was a cavalcade of strange, menagerie, if you will, of very strange characters that were up there. And when I got down there, Ishmael saw me and goes, "There he is! That's the guy!" And he goes, "Come here, come here, come here." And he started introducing me to everybody in the area. And I thought, this is cool. I didn't really want to be down where fans are, because I wanted to kind of just do this thing off to the side where people can see. I don't want to distract people, but I want to be this display of emotion. And next thing I know, I go to leave. He goes, "Where are you going? You got to stay here with us. You're here with us now. You're not going anywhere." So that really was the the genesis of the character, the Dancing Friar. He's also referred to as the Abbot Costello, because over the years, Phil, it grew. I would buy robes every year, two or three robes, and I'd put them in a little bag, and I'd bring them in with me. You'd get a robe and a rope. And I would hand them out to fans who were in the area. "You want to come here and put the robe on?" We never say dress up. We always say robe up. "You want to robe up with us?" "Sure." And then Tony Fantano, who's known as the Monsignor Malarkey, he showed up as well. Monsignor Malarkey was, he's got a giant blonde fro. He's just full of energy. He's very emotive. And he's the kind of guy, he's in a punk band. And he's just, everything about him is just screams San Diego awesomeness, right? And then Kai shows up, another friend of ours, Kai LaRusso. He became Friar Blue. So then we started building on this. And Tony came to me and he said, "Hey, we can't be the Dancing Friars. You know, there's other people like Nacho Padre, one of the guys who would dress, would put on a nacho mask, right, and then just heckle people. Then there was a guy who dressed as a gorilla. He was come up there, who was a good friend of ours. And it just started to become, like I said, this collection of craziness that I really envisioned. And that's where it started.
Boy, what a story. But it works. You know, it works. It gets the fans involved that are around that section. It motivates them to start cheering and stuff. Like, for instance, give us an ole, ole, ole.
That's okay. So what we do is there are a series of what we call chants, because we are now the Right Field Mission that Tony has dubbed us. The Right Field Mission, we're trying to play on the San Diego Mission theme. And we had we tried to do both Spanish cheers or chants, we call them, or things that people would recognize. So this one is when a runner is on second base, or if any runner is in scoring position. So as long as he's not on first, he's on second or third, we begin the Olay chant. And I hope I don't yell too much into this. I'll try to keep it tamed. But it goes something like this. Olay, 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 olay. Padres, Padres. And you do that twice. And it's the same chant you would hear at soccer stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So it's specific to situational baseball in that sense. We have one that we've been using for years that Kai LaRusso, a.k.a. Friar Blue, helped develop. That's my favorite because it is universal. We could use it at when the former football team that is now, that shall not be named, went to the north of us, that ugly city up there. we used the same chant, and it went like this. San Diego, go, go, go. And you do that as a three-peat. Right, you do it three times. Uh-huh. San Diego, go, 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 and that can be any time that you want to motivate the stand to get loud to move on. There's the standard. Let's go, Padres. Let's go. That one has been around for a million years. And then, of course, is any name that fits into the cadence of Will Myers, that sort of thing. So those are just a couple samples. Some of them that we've added on that I love, that I think you might like, Friarsville, would be the Por Favor chant. Anytime you need energy from the team or the stands, and you're just pleading to the Almighty for something to happen, you say, Por Favor, Por Favor, Hey, Por Favor, Por Favor, Hey. And everybody yells on the hey, so it's very animated. If they don't speak Spanish, at least they can say hey.
You know. But you know, I sit in the right field just because of the entertainment value that. Well, when I can get to the stadium and my body's feeling okay to go out and do that, I've been there and I've seen the effect that you and the other guys have. Doing this with the fans, they'll start joining in. They seem more animated in that part of the park compared to other parts of the park that I've sat in where there isn't any right field mission.
You've got to have someone there because, you know, things like the Pod Squad, God bless them, cute girls, they're all really talented, they're fun, but that's not really a squad of people. And again, when the organization has a group that goes around, aka like the Pod Squad. For lack of a better word, it's not grassroots. It's very formulaic and sort of institutional. So it lacks that spikes. One of the cool things that Monsignor Malarkey, aka Tony Fantano, did a few years back is he noticed something. There are a few the stairwells that go up to the next section above. Those, when you look at them from afar, he said they look like pulpits, right? And I said, that's funny. Why don't we do something there? He said, okay, when they hit a home run or if we score, each Friar has to get up on the pulpit and do the Free Willy dance, we call it. It's basically hands out to the right with a two-stroke, boom, boom, hands out to the left with a two-stroke, boom, boom, hands out to the right with a two-stroke, boom, boom. It's a little dance that we do, a little movement that we do, coordinated together. And we thought that was really freaking bitching because when we first started doing it, sometimes you get people like, get out of the way. And now it's like people are like, oh, the Friars are up on the pulpits. It's on.
It's a score. Yeah. It's a home run. You know, we've scored. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen you guys do that as well, and that's pretty cool. I like that. And it does honestly get my blood flowing, too, you know, that when you're at a baseball game, sometimes it can lag on for a little bit, and it's just like, holy shit, do something, please. But then when they do something, and to have you guys add a little bit more excitement to it in the section, getting the crowd going, that gets everybody electric, and you can really notice it. You know, throughout history of baseball, at every stadium, at every time, there has been somebody that's been a grassroots fan that is a character of one sort or another. There was a lady, I think she was a Giants fan. I don't know if she was at Brooklyn Dodgers or New York Giants. I can't remember which team it was. But she was an everyday fan, and she was, I think her name was Marge or something like that. But she was a character self. They had the Brooklyn Dodgers had like a marching band of people that can barely play instruments and stuff. That got the crowd going. So what you're doing is pretty much a baseball tradition in some ways. For Amen. Like I said, many, many parks.
Well, you know, when you look at things like, usually these things spring up in right field. So New York Yankees have the bleacher bums, what are the bleacher creatures?
Yeah.
And the bleacher bums are in Chicago, is that right? So it's usually in what they used to refer to as the cheap seats, right?
Right.
But in fact, you know, there are no cheap seats anymore in baseball.
No.
But that's the cards we're dealt. What I find most interesting is that you're right. But one of my favorite stadiums to go to is Oakland Stadium. You know, when you watch those guys in right field, and I have a ton of friends up there now, I am most envious of their ability to do these coordinated. Here's the difference. Oakland allows them to bring drums into the game and noisemakers. They bring in their flags. You know, that is what I wish the Padres would allow, you know, because in those areas, it becomes the pulse of baseball. It goes back in history, as you mentioned.
It does. It really does. And it's a shame we can't do that, you know.
No. Noisemakers are outlawed. Even, and here's the weird thing. Friarfield, they sell cowbells, the little tiny bells, in the shop at the official store at Petco. You know that? But you're not allowed to ring that bell because you can't bring noisemakers in.
Yeah, why not? You know, there's noise from the crowd. Why can't you have noisemakers? Why can't you do any of that stuff? Well, you might beat somebody on the head with your cowbell. Can't have that. You know, the world we live in now is really fucked up. I mean, what you got to go through now to go into a baseball stadium, you know, your bag is searched, you're checked for metal devices. What kind of a fucking world are we living in? Well, we know. Fortunately, he's in the hospital.
Right. Those things happen. I mean, I hate to wish. I don't want to wish this guy to have any problems at all. My biggest dream was that maybe he'd get shanked in the yard at San Quentin. But, you know, I'd really want him to live so we can lose this election. Nonetheless, I digress. I did this funny thing a few years ago, Friarfield, that you'll find interesting. I was allowed to come into the park for some event with the Padres and had my bag with me. So it was before the game. And then we toured around the stadium. I can't remember why we got to look around at different things that they were looking at doing. It was early on. I had my cowbell with me, my famous cowbell. And it's got this ring on it right at the top of it that you would affix to something like a drum set, let's say. And I took a lock that I had in my bag. And I went to my seat and I locked this thing on that. And then put the chairs in front of it. We finished the tour. I left the stadium and came back a few hours later. And I was like, fuck, I'm sure that these guys cut the lock off and took my prized possession, that cowbell I love so much. And sure enough, they hadn't even touched it. The chairs were still stacked on top of it. So I was able to sneak in, and I won't tell you how, a drumstick with me. And lo and behold, I had that thing on there, and they moved the chairs back, and the game started. And then I didn't play that damn thing once until we hit a home run, and then I started with the cowbell. Ding, 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 ding. This went on for almost three innings, and people were loving it. It was so funny, because I wasn't doing it inappropriately and making noise. I was just doing it in sync with whatever was going on the field. Now, the third or fourth inning, suddenly security, and it was not just any security, it was like the capo di tutti capi. They brought this guy in, and he was like, we have a question. We want to know, how did you get that in here? I was like, oh, I just brought it into my bag. And they went back, and they started talking to each other. Blah, 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 blah. They came back like, Are you sure that you brought that in your bag? Because we check everything. I was like, yeah. Luckily, they're like, well, you have to put it away. You can't use it anymore. I said, okay, great. I thought, fudge. I was really hoping to be able to get away with having a noisemaker there.
It just does not make sense to me. You know, because you go to a ball game and, well, you eat while you're watching it, if you can afford the prices at the concession stands.
Amen.
So you eat and you just sit there and look at it and clap when something good happens. Why not have noisemakers? Why not make it a festive atmosphere, instead of, watching televised golf?
Most of our friends out there who have a cocktail in their hand can't necessarily clap. That's part of it. It's like, I've always noticed that Petco Park is relatively quiet many days. And if you go to the stadium, it's not. There are cup holders there, folks. Just put the thing down and you can make as much noise with your two palms as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I love noise.
Oh, yeah, especially at a baseball game. Because it's festive. It gets the blood flow of the building going. It gets the fans get into it. You have people getting into making noise or clapping next to you and in your section. And then you want to start clapping and make the noise and say, yeah, come on, boys, let's score another run.
Nowhere has it been more apparent than 2020, I would say. Listening to the pumped in sounds. And when you're watching, there's fans outside, waving flags and hitting drums and pots and pans in the buildings above. And I just get a kick out of it because the piped-in sound is so... I get it. I get why they want to do it. But it was like when I first came to Petco Park and saw that they had to put up a sign that said, make noise or get loud. As if it was like fans are too stupid to know that this is the time that we cheer.
All right, yeah, it's a home run. Okay, so first you probably want to maybe stand up and you take your right hand and you put it against the left hand and it makes this curious sound like this. Yeah,
the sound of two one hand clapping is? It's a snap.
Yeah.
Like a sorority girl.
And 20,000 people snapping will be heard around the park.
What is it? Around the world and two snaps up.
That's right.
So what I find more fascinating is that over the years, now I've been doing it for 15 years.
Wow, 15? And really? I didn't realize it was that much.
15 years. I was in my 30s, and now I'm in my 50s, so the math holds true. What I thought was, as I'm getting older and just not able to wiggle as much as I used to, the dancing fryer may have to change his name to, like, the artist formerly dancing like fryer.
The limping fryer.
it reminds me, I got that name because of a famous character on The Simpsons show that was on for years, Dancing Homer. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
There's the story in which the isotopes of Springfield had a fan, and it was Homer Simpson, of course, that dressed up with a cape and danced around acting like an idiot. And always wanting to poke fun at myself, I thought, you know what? Dancing Homer, dancing Fryer.
Yeah, there you go. We were just talking about The Simpsons today.
Oh, really?
How that show forecasted so many things that have come true. The Trump election. But now it also, I don't know if this was the last season or not of it. I forget what my friend told me, but they actually had Trump as president and he gets sick from something and he gets in the hospital and he's not well. And then he dies and they have him in a coffin.
What?
And seriously.
Whoops.
and Lisa Simpson becomes the new president.
Oh, yes, I do remember.
So many other things from The Simpsons have come true. I'm just wondering, what if?
Well, maybe if the isotopes would only play the Padres and lose to them in the World Series, maybe that would be fortuitous.
Yes. Meanwhile, we got to worry about not losing to the Dodgers. And like I said earlier, at the beginning of the program, I think we've got a good chance of taking these guys on. I think the team has a lot of heart and a lot of talent when they use it properly. They have this tendency sometimes to get up there and, bases loaded and stuff, and try and hit that big, home runner, that big hit. And sometimes you don't need a big hit. Sometimes you need a single.
Yeah. A few years back, Tony Fantano got the idea to do a pod. We did a video podcast. We had a YouTube channel. We still have it, and we haven't done one in a few years at this point. So he's been bugging me to do it. But it's called the Swagger Report. There's a lot of old ones online if you go back and look. And it's funny because what Tony Monsignor Malarkey had brought up to me was that the thing about baseball, and it's one of the, well, it's probably true with many sports, but in particular baseball, your confidence level, right? Your confidence level can be the one determining factor. And when you get on streaks, because baseball is so long, when you get on streaks, you feed off those streaks, and that could be good or bad. Remember a few weeks back when we had the unmentioned Tatis had that awful string of spate of crap
right.
that was happening to him, and you could just see his heart and his shoulders, and he's just looking down the whole time. Now he's got his swagger back. So we believe that there is something called the swagger quotient, right? It's the level. It's like on your video game, where you're, what level your swagger is at. This team has some of the highest swagger quotients of any team I've ever seen.
Oh, my right? God, yes.
Talk about that.
They swagger. Oh, my God.
The dancing?
The dancing
in the dugout?
The energy, the camaraderie with these guys. It's just incredible. I have not seen a team like this the whole 20 years I've been here as a Padres fan.
Wow. And that's amazing because when we've looked at teams in the past that had guys that were, you know, sort of perfunctorily decent baseball players, your Chase Headleys, your Nick Hundleys, nothing wrong with those guys. You know, one went on to the Yankees, the other one went on to Colorado. They had very solid long-term careers, but they didn't have breakout promise. They didn't have that sexiness that a team like this has. And it's not just being productive on a sort of base level. It's when you're down. This is a team that when you are in the seventh inning, we've got the most comebacks of any team from the seventh inning on. So even when you're watching just dog crap baseball and that they're producing the first two innings and Paddock is getting shelled and what do you know? Seventh inning is right around the corner. Suddenly these guys are popping 3, 4, 5 home runs. They're hitting grand slams like no other team has ever hit them before. It's swagger. It's that quotient, that metric that is undefinable.
That's true. And you watch that. You watch what they do. You watch how they interact on the field, especially Tatis and Machado, but also Tatis with Cronenworth as well. Just the way they interact with each other every time something goes good. You know, even if something doesn't go too good, they're still there. They have their positive attitudes going for the most part, and that reflects on what they do on the plate when they're batting, you know, or what they're doing when they're having to be a defense player.
Did you watch, like, Tatis with Molina the other day? They don't just do it with their own players. They have fun. They look like they're having genuine fun even with the other players.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's what Tatis wants most of all. I watched his interview on YouTube and stuff, which was quite interesting. And, yeah, he wants to just go out there every day like he was a kid playing the game. And having fun playing the game. Win or lose, having fun. And that's
a great career.
that's the thing and the key to this club, you know, that's going to go on for a number of seasons, I think, with this group of guys.
What do you think about Tingler?
Tingler, you know, I didn't like Andy Green. The dumb bastard Andy Green. Ting Ding. I call him Ting Ding. Ting Ding is a pretty goddamn good manager. I mean, look at what he's done as a rookie manager in a short 60-game season. Look at what he did with the bullpen and how he put the people in the other night, you know, when we won and beat the rotten-ass St. Louis Cardinals.
Sorry.
But, yeah, I've got a lot of faith in Jace Tingler. At first, it was like, who the hell is Jace Tingler?
with a name like that.
Yeah, Tingler. Yeah, I said Tingler. Sounds like, a sex toy. Yeah, have fun, ladies. A new toy is on the market. It's called the Tingler. Yes. It'll vibrate you all over the place.
You may not know when it's in, you may not know when it's out, but you'll feel it tingling.
Sorry, kids, if you're listening. But this is an adult program. Anyhow, now I forgot what we were talking about. Jace Tingler, he's
finding out how do you see him different than the way Andy Green managed? I have my ideas, but I was curious because I've heard you talk on this.
Well, Andy Green was just like...
Again...
Like vanilla ice cream, the way he managed. Jace Tingler is more like Rocky Road. You get surprises in the goddamn ice cream every bite. And time and time again, this year and this season, Jace Tingler has surprised me. I've not had to call him out on anything except for a couple of times during the whole season, and it's just an improvement, and the guys are reacting to him as well. They like him as a manager. Yeah, Will Myers didn't like Andy Green. There's no secret about that. And now look at how Will's doing now when he has a manager that he enjoys playing for. He's just spectacular. He's one of the guys that hit one of the grand slams, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the point, I think, is that one guy manages like a player's manager, and the other guy manages like an ownership manager or a managed manager. You know, he's like your angry uncle who never, you're having a pool party outside, he's the one who always goes, "Don't dive! Quit diving!" Like, mm-hmm. Who wants to be around that? You can only handle that for so long. You know, and then coming in and saying, like, we're going to change the culture here. A lot of that was just the sort of like the first-time manager like Andy Green coming in there and really trying to develop something through sheer force of will. Jace Tingler? Not the same animal, is he? The players enjoy him, and you can tell you when they watch them interact with him that they respect him, and he treats them as equals and expects them to perform as such, right? They're not kids. They're adults.
Adults, yes. Sometimes acting like kids, which is great, but adults. Okay, one more thing before we have to go. I want to ask you, what do you think about the Dodger Padre series? How do you think we're going to fare in that series?
I am hoping that the pitching holds true because they are a hitting machine over there. Now, they've had some problems as well. Who's that little shorts? Not the shorts, up the second baseman. I got to look at their lineup right now. What disturbs me most about the Dodgers is that they are across the board a productive, 2 points above just standard productivity. Meaning that when you look at their numbers, at least their hitters, let's talk about position players before we get their pitching, because their pitching is formidable with Kershaw and all that. But their bullpen can be got. Their bullpen can be got, and since we're late bloomers, I think this is the perfect team to play next. I believe that we're going to beat them, and here's why. It's in the cards for us.
It seems to be. It really seems to be.
Right.
It just everything keeps clicking and clicking in the favor of the Padres, and it's about goddamn time, too, huh?
Well, that is that's another show when we talk about the longevity of crap that we've watched over a period of years.
Yes.
And why now they're finally coming to a head. A lot of it has to do with finances. You know, fellas that we would follow on Twitter, like James the Padres, that brought these things out, sort of forced the hand of that team of the organization to go and spend some actual money on a team. And you know what? With a guy like like AJ Preller, he did it strategically. He did it knowing what talent both was out there and what he could actually trade up for. Right?
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. All right, Corey, thank you so much for taking time to pop on the Friar Phil Show. I thought this was going to be the last program for the season, but I'm going to go ahead and probably do another one. I have to talk to you guys about something serious. that's happening. So we'll probably get into that next week. All right. Take care of yourselves. Be safe and keep it lit. I'll talk to you next time.